Are you ready that I can call on you tonight for answers?
Yes.
Good. It could happen, you know, that I get a sudden wave of amnesia or fatigue, perhaps. And then I will look to you. Oh, okay. All right, page White Magic. Purity of motive has become a habit of the mind somewhere between the second and the third initiation, and we are no longer a hazard. All right. May I remind all who read that the establishing and stabilizing of right habits is, for the aspirant to discipleship, a prime requisite. Those who are working in the field of planetary evolution are looking for dependable instruments. That's us, right? And this cannot be too emphatically impressed upon all of you. Who did he say he was writing this book for again? Was it aspirants, probationers, disciples, or what was it? The accepted disciples? It was probationary disciples, he said, right? Sometimes a rather difficult book for probationary disciples, but okay. People whose emotional moods and feelings run riot. I guess we could call that, in a way, drowning, couldn't we? Whoopsie. We found, by the way, that number thing. It was in a footnote on page 1140. So numbers on the concrete mental plane and geometrical symbolism on the abstract mental plane. Okay. So let's see. I want to just underline this very quickly. Don't you miss singing, though? Come on. Admit it.
Yes.
I knew you. I knew it. I knew you did. All right. All right. So this is a... Remember, we discussed two types of drowning. And this is the one type of drowning. Engulfment. But not devitalization. So people whose emotional moods and feelings run riot, or who lack physical control, cannot be counted upon in an emergency by those who are seeking helpers. It's very simple. Just like in any company or enterprise, you look for people you can count on, people you can trust, and they have to prove themselves. So I guess we're in the business of proving ourselves at this time. People whose minds are clouded, or whose inability to hold the mind steady in the light, is inherent, because it happens to all of us now and then, right? We do have those moments of cloudiness, but he's talking about all the time, are unsuitable workers in the high places of world endeavor. So he's trying to encourage us to become suitable. This remark need deter no one in these groups from pushing forward, for the recognition of a defect is a preliminary step towards its overcoming. It all just sounds like good common sense, doesn't it? We have to be able to see ourselves first. So this is where, you know, we have that Aclary formula: alignment, crisis, light, revelation, integration. And this is the period of light, or the recognition of defects. But at least it can be cleared up if we recognize them. These groups are in training, and this must be borne in mind, or else discouragement is apt to ensue when the ideal is enunciated. I wouldn't be surprised but that it will be a couple of incarnations, one or two or more, before we're really ready to go with all that we have learned assimilated in a practical manner. Does anyone here ever get discouraged?
Yes.
What do you do with your discouragement?
Slap myself.
Do you say?
Yes.
I find sometimes meditation does help.
I'll try that.
Yeah, I suppose, and that's the time, you know, I suppose, to really disidentify with the astral body or the Kama Manas, and to repeat that thing that he said, you know, let reality govern my every thought and truth be the master of my life. And he said, what did we discuss the other day where he said the disciple has to realize that no source of, how does it go, nothing of a painful or disturbing nature, paraphrase, arising in the astral body matters in the very least. Didn't he say that?
Yes.
I think it's hard at the moment, isn't it, when matters in the very. That's a good sign. It leads him to assume the position that not one single thing which produces any reaction of pain or distress in the emotional body matters in the very least. So I suppose it's kind of a first-rate technique, and it's kind of a don't care and it doesn't matter. But you know, of course, it doesn't mean you shouldn't understand where it comes from, because that can equal to suppression when you say, well, it just doesn't matter and you just forget it. It's good to understand, but it's not good to dwell on these things. All right, in other words, we cannot be discouraged workers. We have to move forward in the attitude of joy and anticipation. We need the opportunity, world need an opportunity go hand in hand at this time. So it's a very Saturnian moment in evolution, because Saturn is the planet of opportunity and also the main ruler of Libra, which is now coming in. The great ones who stand as a wall, you've heard of the phrase the great defending wall? It's a magnificent thought. He says some of you are marked out for protection. Those especially who are preparing for the reappearance of the Christ, marked out for protection. And Master Moria talks about how easy it would be to attack the usual spiritual worker. But they do manage to protect those who are working, at least there's a certain deferral of karma. So he's another one, and especially he strengthens and protects the world aspirants and disciples. The great ones who stand as a wall between humanity and planetary karma. It's a deferral of karma. No true karma can be indefinitely deferred, but while you are needed, you're allowed the space to do what you can do. We are told they are hard-pressed at this time, the great ones. And I assure you that this is but an inadequate statement of the case. They don't usually complain very much, but the pressure on them would be crushing if we were to try to apply it to ourselves. We oftentimes think our load is just plenty, you know, like we couldn't stand another little bit. But we can only, by comparison, imagine. I have this image in my mind of Master Moria running into a room, taking off one hat, putting on another, and running out. It's a story. But I think it's one of those stories that circulates around occult groups. But it is kind of a symbol of the incredible pressure under which they work. The thoughts of men since the middle of the Atlantean period have steadily been attracted towards the destructive or left-hand path. Well, that's a long time. That's 4 or 5 million years ago. That's a long time of desiring matter and form. Because selfishness has been the motive and self-interest the dominant factor. Part of the work of the Christ when he came 2,000 years ago was to offset this tendency by the inculcation through example and precept of sacrifice and unselfishness. And the martyr spirit, tinctured as it often was by hysteria and heavenly self-interest, I have to say I like his humor, okay, was one of the results of this endeavor. So that was a particularly sixth-ray quality, and we are somewhat outgrowing the martyr spirit, but as we know, martyrdom is much discussed today in certain religions, and it's sort of the tail end of this sixth ray expression. And even Master M says, well, do you want to know the fastest way? He says, martyrdom is the fastest way. I find that a difficult, it's a hard saying, but I'm sure he meant what he said. Seen from the standpoint of the hierarchy, the effort has been successful. For the Christian spirit stands for reorientation to heavenly things. And it's just that we have to reinterpret heaven in a less selfish way. When I tell some Christians, well, you know, your heaven is located on the third subplane of the astral plane, they do a bit of a double take at first, and then maybe want to know a little bit more. We have the technical explanations of the states of consciousness that they long for as eternal. And you know, our system takes their eternals and puts them into cyclic law. Now this is not appreciated because people want to be safe forever. You know, they don't necessarily want the challenge of all the things that could arise forever. When Master Moria promises us endless labor, and you better smile about it, you know, he means exactly what he says, endless labor. The succession of universes is endless, and always the one being in its diverse aspects will be laboring against self-imposed obstacles. Have you heard the old philosophical saying that God is not God unless he can make the stone he cannot lift? This is interesting, you know. It's a bit anthropomorphic, you know. I mean, God as man, but there's something to that, that whole idea of self-limitation. So we will have labor in a self-limited creative scenario forever. And thus it has been forever. So when Moria says, get used to endless labor, I don't think it's so bad if one just had the energy. Of course, that can be taken care of too. So the Christian spirit stands for the reorientation to heavenly things. Hence, purity of motive and the instinct for service, which latter keynote is new from the standpoint of past eternities. Yeah, it's so interesting because the Buddha basically brought within himself the seeds of the first solar system ripened in the Buddha. But the Christ's dispensation was new. You know, the Buddha brought, we are told, a tremendous expression of God as light. God is light, God is wisdom. And then comes the Christ with God is love. And for our planet, this is revolutionary. Having labored under a third-ray personality in our planet, it's new to think of sacrifice, service, and love. And looked at from the point of view of the personality, it seems abhorrent, but looked at from the perspective of the soul, it seems inevitable. Sacrifice, service, and love. It seems like a necessity, not that you are compelled to do it, but that you deeply want to, you deeply desire these things, which look so painful from the personal perspective. I mean, I'm sure if we could spend just an hour in the consciousness of the Christ, it would be an overwhelming, totally life-changing experience. Even a few seconds, even a few minutes, you know, has a profound effect. It's just a whole different way of looking at things. It's based upon the second principle, which is meant to emerge on our planet. And the amazing thing is that people can get so caught up in the third aspect that there's just no appreciation for this other aspect at all. And the worst examples of that are the third aspect Black Lodge, which think that it's totally ridiculous to get caught up in the second aspect. They see no value in it at all. It's completely insane to them. And they are sincere in thinking that it is worthless. But just a few moments in the right presence, and we know the difference, maybe forever. In spite of this, however, in spite of the relative success from the point of view of the hierarchy, the tendency to selfish interest is the most potent factor in the world at this time. Well, this was written in the early 30s, of course, but you know, that's not so long ago. And we certainly have, he said, you know, watch out, you have selfish individuals now, watch out what might happen if you get selfish groups. And, well, we have it now. We have very selfish groups looking out for their own interests. I suppose it's always a balance, because the new groups are also emerging who are very altruistic. Anyway, the tendency to selfish interest is the most potent factor in the world at this time. And hence the critical situation existing between the hierarchy of light and the hierarchy controlling the left-hand path, or the path of control by form and desire. Now, you know, this is very interesting, because this is not just the third aspect. This is the perversion of the second aspect. Because the form is actually a second aspect phenomenon. The building of form. Matter per se is the third aspect. But form is conditioned by the second aspect, because it brings together on a geometrical basis, it aggregates matter on a geometrical basis, the form builder. And desire is a reflection of the second aspect. So in a way, we are looking at second aspect happenings within the general third aspect of the lower part of the Sola Logos. So, now, when was this written? World War II had not occurred. Had not occurred. And it was the profound hope of the hierarchy after 1918, you know, they emerged then, that no further extension of the World War would be needed. But there was a further extension. And so later in his books, D.K. referred to 1914 to 1945, the two phases of one war. Now, you know, one can only hope that we're not dealing with a tertiary extension of the same process, because selfishness has certainly not been defeated. I suppose a certain number of second degree initiates, were they to be able to appear, would weigh in heavily against world selfishness. Because that's when the truly selfish desire disappears, Mars is conquered to a degree, and, you know, it doesn't take many disciples to offset a lot of other workers on the other side. So, you know, if we can overcome lower Mars in our own system, you know, in terms of the egoic lotus, we're getting into the opening of the sixth petal, which, as we have discussed, when completely open, along with development of the eighth petal, will signify the second initiation. When we can get into that kind of reasonable selflessness in our own lives and have that spread, it will counteract much of what is presently occurring. I think, you know, one of the things we definitely desperately need is free or cheap available energy, which is not based upon oil supply. But of course, the possibility of getting that kind of energy has been held back by those who have a vested interest in sustaining oil as the main source of fuel. But I think the handwriting is on the wall for those so-called dirty sources of energy. I mean, you know, I think United States has had a huge awakening with respect to its whole southern coast and all of the habitat and wildlife and fishing industry and other industries. It's a terrible thing. And something has to wake us up. If you try to look to countries who have a strong Aquarius in their chart, like the United States has an Aquarius soul, and Russia has an Aquarius soul, I think Holland or Netherlands also. Anyway, when Aquarius shows up, you will see those countries who will be among the first to develop the Aquarian modes of energizing things. And I think that when, in this age of Pisces, which is like the age of oil in many respects, it's Neptune, when the disadvantages of this form of energy finally hit home, then we will have more Manhattan projects for new energy. You know the Manhattan Project, what it was. It was the development of the atomic bomb under very compressed time schedule. In other words, it was doing the impossible in a short period of time, so that the Axis powers did not get that. And when a country truly mobilizes its resources to do something, it can be done. So the cheap energy can be found, I'm sure. And now we have a lot of wind power, which is air, you know, the air sign, all that's coming in as well. So we have the opportunity here to change the economic factors which are some of the root causes of war. Remember, the Christ cannot appear or return in person unless there is a degree of sharing, unless there is a degree of peace, and until the church has begun to clean house. Well, at least we see one. Something's happening. Okay. So, you know, people like ourselves, we have to do everything we can to promote the unlikelihood of phase three of the Great War. That's what we have to avoid. Let there be no discouragement, however, for the spiritual thought resulting in magical work of one brother of pure intent is of far greater potency than that of many brothers who follow the tendencies of the personality. So, that's an encouraging thought. And what did he say? One person thinking truth can have this effect on his entire, even just thinking truth. Not only talking it. One person thinking truth. I wonder if I can find that reference, because I haven't seen it for quite a while, but it's that's no good. In emotional body matters. Okay. Let me see if I can find it. Thinking truth. As usual, probably I won't be able to find it, but we'll see. Oh, there's one. No, it's not here, but it is. It's here. Maybe it's not the gerund, you know. Maybe it's not the thinking truth, but who thinks truth, something like that. Who are thinking truth in every European country, in the United States, in parts of Asia and South Africa, have found certain disciples who are at large, who are thinking truth. Let me call attention to that phrase. The most important workers in this new group and those who are closest to the great ones are those whose daily thought life is oriented to the new ideal. That this thought life of theirs may work out in definite esoteric activities may be true, but they are first of all and always those who live in and work from the high and secret place. Anyway, the power of thinking truth. We have so much good teaching, it's just a question of doing it, really. Okay, so one brother of pure intent. Though every aspirant, as he grasps the magnitude of the plan and surveys the forces arrayed against him, may be overcome by the apparent futility of his effort, and, you know, there is DK with that qualifier, apparent futility, and the seeming smallness of the part he plays, let him remember that there is a steadily growing group of those similar to him, and that this is a group effort. So the overcoming of the left-hand path is not just for one or two. There are many who are waking up to the necessity and the ability. Under the law, the great ones work through their disciples in all countries. And never before have there been so many endeavoring to fit themselves for this function of being, transmitters of the purpose. For this function of being transmitters of the purpose, like the transmitting devas of the atomic plane, who take the word of the soul and transmit it to all the lunar vehicles, we are like them, transmitters of the purpose. And never before has there existed such a strong inner integrity and subjective relation between the workers in all fields and all parts of the world. Now, this was just when the new group of world servers was getting started. I believe the year was 1931. Just a few years after, 6 years, 7 years, 1931, 32, after the ashrams moved to the Buddhic plain in 1925. So there was a major hierarchical conclave, and it was decided that the new group of world servers would be formed. Now, can you see how the new group of world servers is a Buddhic impulse? Where are the boundaries? See, where are now the boundaries between the serving groups if you have one united serving group? See, I find it very interesting. I put together a few ideas. The new group of world servers is ruled by what sign?
Taurus.
And what ray comes through Taurus? Okay, and how do Ray 4 servers serve? What do they do? The major task for the fourth Ray aspirant, study the new group of world servers under Ray 4. The major task of the fourth Ray aspirant is to harmonize the new ideas with the old so that there can be no dangerous gap or break. They are those who bring about a righteous compromise and adapt the new and the old so that the true pattern is preserved. They are engaged in the bridging process. This is in Psych 2 in the section on healing, page 142, 143. So, which plane is the plane of harmony? Fourth plane. The Buddhic plane. New group of world servers, fourth ray, plane of harmony, Buddhi, wholeness. And this happened 6 or 7 years after the hierarchy itself, the majority of ashrams, moved to the Buddhic plane. So all of this is no coincidence. The founding of the new group of world servers is a direct effect of that move, direct result of that refocusing. Only there's a couple of atmic ashrams. They're largely Ray 1, I believe. And there are some in the third department that are still higher mental, and they are scientific ashrams, and they are run by fourth degree initiates rather than masters. So, okay, that's how the new group of world servers works, bridging. Okay. For the first time in history, is there a coherent group for the masters to use? Okay, 80 years ago. Boy, time really... 80 years ago. This all seems so fresh to me, you know, because so much of the writing could not be appreciated at the time. It couldn't even be gathered together at the time. The last books to be published were published 11 or 12 years after Alice Bailey died. So even the students for whom all this was written, they never saw all of it under their eye at the same time. And now we do, and have a much different interpretation. Heretofore, there have been lonely, isolated workers in tiny, detached groups. And this has greatly hampered the work. Now all this has changed. Well, modern communications, Mercury, all of the telecommunications system So Mercury and communications making one world, one mind, and now one internet. I mean, it really is a revolution. Think of what we consider indispensable now. We're all sitting here with our computers on the desk, and or have at various times. And why is that? We're plugged into what? Some kind of global connectedness is taken for granted by every one of us. We can talk to almost anyone we want to, anywhere, at any time. And we know what's going on everywhere, mostly. And that's just in a few years, and we just consider it, that's how it is now. And tremendous, and a revolution probably given to us by the Department of Civilization, sort of the third-rate department, Department of Communications, with technology, Ray 5, Ray 7 coming in. It's a 357 thing, pretty much. And it's very Aquarian. Aquarius transmits what ray? 5. And it is and is associated with what ray?
7.
Well, that's through its planetary rulers, but the constellation itself is associated with Ray 3. He tells us Aquarius and Ray 3, that a lot of Ray 3 goes through this constellation. So I think we can see that it will be an age in which science and economics are very focal subjects. And we can already see it shaping up. In other words, look, if we don't share, there's no way out of this mess. So we have to figure out what sharing really, really means. It's like a body in which certain centers take all the juice and some centers don't have anything. So we have to share. Okay, I want to charge you all. You know what a charge is? A charge is like...
Ask you.
You lay a duty upon a person. You give them a... what can I call it? Kind of a pep talk. You give them a very strong exhortation. And they are charged with your energy when the talk is over. We have in some of our ritual work what's called the charge. So after the candidate has been through a lot of work, the master of the lodge comes down after much work and gives the candidate the charge. Meaning it's sort of like the destiny for what he has to do. I want to charge you all to realize this and to work to substantiate this group integrity and to develop the power to recognize all such workers everywhere under any name or organization and to cooperate with them when so recognized. And many or some have been in the Arcane School. Who's been in the Arcane School here? A number of us. And we all remember on our meditation report form the very last thing: have you recognized any members of the new group of world servers? Which is important because it strengthens their hands and it strengthens our connection. So cooperate with them when you recognize them. This is not easy because it presupposes an inner sensitiveness to the plan and the ability to recognize principles and not just differences in technique. Principles governing conduct and administration. A capacity to overlook the non-essentials and to emphasize the essentials. I have some sad stories. Okay. I was a member of a group of very scholarly esotericists that got into a terrible fight and eventual destruction over whether the one about whom naught may be said included our solar logos as a major center or a minor center. This was the cause of the destruction of the group. It had the ability to emphasize essentials, wouldn't you say? Okay. Quite forgetting the fact that God is love. Nobody argued about that, but nobody thought it was important. Needless to say, there was a lot of third ray in this group.
But that is the compromise.
Righteous compromise?
Yes.
Not a chance, not a chance. All right. Okay, what else do we have to do here? If we're going to recognize the members of the New Group of World Service, sensitiveness to the plan, recognition of principles, not emphasizing non-essentials, a submergence of personal ambition and interest, and the furthering of group ideals. It reads like a textbook here. And steady preservation of the inner contact through meditation and the overlooking and non-emphasis of personality reactions. Well, we've heard it many times. If we're going to emphasize the group integrity, DK gives us a charge to try to do these things. Okay, these are the basic prerequisites and should receive the attention of workers and students in all groups. And here he comes, he gives us the 5 o'clock mantram to think towards the New Group of World Servers. He's giving it just as the New Group of World Servers was being formed. We have committed it to memory, we do use it. May the power of the one life pour through the group of all true servers. May the love of the one soul characterize the lives of all who seek to aid the great ones. May I or we fulfill my or our part in the one work through self-forgetfulness, harmlessness, and right speech. And then you carry the thought, after this is said, you carry the thought forward to the servers and the great ones who stand back of human evolution. And this can be done in a few seconds, and he says, will not only aid the magical work of the forces of light, but will serve to stabilize the individual. Sounds worthy. How many people use this? We use it in class all the time, don't we? And okay. It will serve to increase his group consciousness and to teach him the process of carrying forward interior subjective activities in the face of and in spite of outer exoteric functioning. Have you ever been called upon to do that? To be in two places at once, you know? Some people, you know, they try to take the time off for the actual moment of the full moon. They really do. But DK said, well, I know you can't all do that. So I will be with you for 12 hours before the full moon, looking for your attention in meditation. I don't know whether he still does that, but it was certainly his practice at the time. Okay, are there any questions about what we've just dealt with? Which was, what was our subject? Something about purity? That's what started us going on this, wasn't it? Where are we? The necessity for purity. Okay. And now we come to a chapter called Fundamental Forms. Okay, who would like to... Here, Julie, I give it to you. You read this.
The simplicity of this will mind such that in a few words the entire process of creative evolution is summarized. The mental plane and idea takes form. The desired plane sentient energy pervades the form. Under the evolutionary process, the form swells and grows.
Okay, we'll just take that bit. A simple rule, which is wide in application and complex in analysis, he tells us, the entire process of creative evolution is summarized. So let's review that. Condensation next ensues, the waters ebb and flow, what does it say? Condensation next ensues, the fire and waters meet, the form swells and grows. Let the magician set his form upon the proper path. Condensation, the meeting of mind and desire, the growing of the mental emotional form, which is then directed in the right way. The entire process of creative evolution, that's quite a statement. I think in a way the whole white magical process tells us how not only a white magician works, but how a planetary logos works, and how a solar logos, and any conscious creator, I think. But this is one that at least has to do with precipitation. Okay. And then, through the right direction.
Through the right direction of the form and its orientation in the needed direction, the purpose of thinking is fulfilled.
How do you orient a form when you create it in your mind? What do you do?
Send it forward.
Yes, and is the factor of direction involved? There is, before a thought form is by thee created, vision its purpose, ascertain its goal, verify the motive. This is the sixth counsel in White Magic for becoming the adept. Before a thought form is by thee created, vision its purpose. Now that's one of the big ones. Ascertain its goal, verify the motive. And then once it is created, do any of these apply? Do you continue to vision its purpose? I would. If I created something, I would hold in mind the purpose for which I have created it so I can correct myself when I sometimes, in the creative process, start doing too much or too little. Ascertain its goal. I have to remind myself, where is this going? Who is this meant to reach? How do I get it there? You know, even who do I write to? You know, those kinds of things. What shall I say in this letter? You know, ascertain its goal. Where is this thought form going? And then, of course, why have I done this? Double check yourself all the time. I would keep these three things going all the time. I would double check myself. So sometimes, you know, I had a certain ideal about, let's say, the Moria Federation, which is a very, very high ideal. And I double check myself all the time to make sure I'm adhering to that ideal without demanding the impossible. It's, you know, it's a... Because after all, the day of the true new esoteric schools cannot yet be with us. See, the great Lord is not yet walking the earth, although some say he's in London, but I mean, not, you know, but I don't think so. What, and driving around in big cars, Rajneesh-like? I don't think so. So when the great Lord again walks the earth, as DK says, when the great Lord begins his earthly career, this will be one of the first schools to appear, it says. So he's talking about the school in the United States, one of the first. So everything now is a seed for those things coming. But I check myself all the time. What am I willing to compromise? What will I not compromise? And I've been tested on this year in tough ways. I've had to give ground on many things, and I've had to say no to other things, and people quit and do all kinds of things. I think we're all tested, you know. And I think I have a fourth-ray personality, kind of, mostly, or have been for a long time on the fourth-ray. And I'm interested to see it working out now, not just in terms of the arts, but in terms of balancing the old and the new, the individual and the group, you know, all these things that need to be balanced, and all the competing personalities of people who cannot quite forget that they are personalities. I set up a really interesting chart. It had a Leo moon. You know, who has a Leo moon here and enjoying it? Okay, so anyway, it has all of this. It has all of this Aquarius in it. And then this Leo moon all by itself on the other side of the chart. So that's called Ahamkara, you know. And it's quite a test. I'm enjoying it. Yes, really enjoying it. Okay. All life is vibration. And the result of vibration is form, dense or subtle. And ever subtler as ascension takes place. All life is vibration. That's so interesting. This is very interesting. Do you see the connection here between vibration, Vulcan, Taurus, law, one, and form? You see this, how this works? What planet rules the law of vibration? Vulcan. What planet is the builder of form? Vulcan. It's the constructive side of the Taurus energy. What is the very first systemic law? The law of vibration. See? So it's so interesting that when there is vibration, there is form. So this is an incredible occult hint, because I want to say this, in the, not astral bodies, no, absolute, there is no vibration, because there's nothing to vibrate, and there's no form. The minute there is vibration, there is form. This is a tough metaphysical question. But it's so interesting to see that this planet that is used by the Manu to create form and anchor form and hold form down into a stable condition to receive the spirit is the same planet ruling the law of vibration. So, you know, I always like to think of Vulcan as the hammer, and all you have to do is hit something and you displace it such that it goes this way, that way, this way, that way, this way, like this. The minute you displace the equilibrium, you have vibration. But it's a chicken and egg story. So, you know, like, which came first? That which... Okay, it's a question of the... do you need something in order to have it vibrate, or is the appearance of vibration something? It's a chicken and egg story, you know, so what really is vibration? Yes?
The one life, is that vibration?
Is the vibration. Is a vibration. Well, you know, the great breath is a vibration. The great breath itself is a vibration.
But could you imagine the one life?
Yeah.
The atomic level,
yeah.
Without form.
Well, you know, this gets into our metaphysics again. For I am a dualistic on this point. When I think of the one life, I say, which one life am I thinking about? I've got two one lives. Do I think of the one life who is the universal life that appeared as life in the outbreath of the great breath? So that to me is like the one life. Or do I think of the one life as that which exists, can't use that word, that which during the in-breath? In other words, do I think of the absolute as the one life, or do I think of that which the absolute became as the one life? And then I sort of have dichotomized those things, so I can't really solve it yet.
If we think of it as the in-breath of the absolute,
yeah,
it is life, but is it also vibration?
Well, to me, the fundamental vibration is the breath. When I think about the great breath, which has been going on forever, between non-being, being, non-being, being, that to me is the fundamental periodicity, if you will. The law of periodicity is ruled by the its greatest example is the great breath. And then there are many other examples as they go down. So, but the question is, you know, there's vibration, because we usually think, well, for something to vibrate, there's got to be something that vibrates. But maybe there's nothing and there's still vibration. I'm willing to discuss it ad nauseum for 3 hours sometime.
Not now, please. No.
But then if I offered you the choice of discussing this for 3 hours or singing, what would you choose?
No, we discussed
it. Yeah, I
figured. Thank you.
As the pulsating life progresses, its rate of vibration changes. Well, this is interesting too, because pulsation is a first ray action. We hear about the first ray as the power that touches and then withdraws. That's very much like the whole idea of the great breath. And we relate breathing to the first ray. So if you look at the center of the jewel in the lotus, it doesn't move this way or that way. DK says it just pulsates. And Dane Rudyard has a book called The Pulse of Life. The life aspect itself, the first ray in the heart, is involved with this on-off, on-off, being, no being, being, no being. See, life, death, life, death. This is all controlled by the first ray. So whatever it is that's pulsating, it increases its rate of vibration. And in the changing of vibration lies hid the secret of form shattering and form building. Because forms will shatter if that of which they are made reach a certain vibratory pitch. And that which appears to be nothing will condense if the material slows down enough to create the illusion of density. So this is very interesting to me. I'm getting a lesson on Vulcan here as I look at this, because Vulcan rules both form shattering, the hammer, and form building, the hammer. You know, in one case, the hammer hits the nail to bring things together and hold things together. And it forges the connections between things. Like I'm thinking about some of these houses that are made with wooden pegs. And they're not even, they all just fit together very beautifully because it's crafted in that way. And Vulcan is all of the pieces that are brought together to fit together. But Vulcan is also the wrecking ball that hits the house and knocks it all down at once, plus a little Pluto.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a question. Isn't it Pluto and Vulcan working together?
Does the top of the head and the base of the spine work together? Mm-hmm. So the answer will have to be yes, because one of the rulers of the top of the head is Vulcan, and the ruler of the base of the spine is Pluto, and they absolutely work together. So, you know, I would ask you from an astrological angle, if you have a Sun-Pluto conjunction or a Sun opposition to Pluto, could it be that Vulcan and Pluto are working together? Because Vulcan is so close to the Sun. Although, it's hit or miss now these days, but some people say that Vulcan is close to the Sun but can be a little farther away. So if in this opposition you hit Vulcan rather than the Sun, you will know. Because Vulcan causes what's called the combust in astrology. The combust is the negating of the quality of the planet involved because of contact with the Sun. But sometimes planets contacting the Sun are not combust, they're just fine. And sometimes contacting the Sun, they are combust. And it probably means that the combust ones, whose quality is negated, have contacted Vulcan, which has in a way gone like this. Because Vulcan is the pressure which keeps a thing from being what it might be. In other words, Vulcan can also be terribly repressive. In other words, Vulcan is a planet which can hold you down. And there are some so-called men of will who use Vulcan to suppress the masses. And we're all familiar with it. It's the downward pressure that keeps you from rising up. And that's a negative aspect of Vulcan. Anyway, I'm learning something here, form shattering and form building and vibration. Matter of fact, just think of it. When we can sing reality into being, we're going to be able to raise our pitch to make things disappear and lower our pitch to make things condense. We'll be able to imagine the whole range of vibrations, and the raising and the lowering of pitch will determine appearance and disappearance. Very low pitch means dense form. Very high pitch means ethereal substance, and so forth. Okay, how's the light back there? Is the heat coming through the top of the building oppressive? Are you being pressed down by light?
No.
No.
Love it.
You love it. Okay.
But you are. Are you?
Well, look. It's not that I'm jealous of all the light you're receiving. I mean, it wouldn't be that.
but we feel our personality has been shaped by the hammer of.
Yes, exactly. Well, you know, and Vulcan is also the pressure of light. Light exerts a pressure. Vulcan is a radiance that drives everything before it. Vulcan is like, like an atomic bomb goes off and you get this incredible flash. That's Vulcan. And when St. Paul fell off his horse, which is kind of interesting, because the horse, in a way, is ruled by Mars and by Sagittarius, and Vulcan and Mars are always at war with each other. So he gets hit in the head with this explosion of light, and he falls off his horse. I thought that's good symbolism. And DK says the record does confirm that he was blind for 3 days. So the blinding light is Vulcan. Okay. Forms are of four kinds in this era of the fourth round. So let's see. I'm going to spread things around. Asgir, would you like to read this one? I'm giving my voice a little rest.
The form of the personality, that vehicle of physical, astral, and mental matter, that provides the means of contact in the three worlds. It is built in each life, the key of the vibration being set up in the life preceding the presence.
Just the black part.
That form proves adequate for the average man and serves him until death. The man who is entering on the upward path starts with a vehicle provided, but during incarnation builds for himself ever a newer and better vehicle. And the more progressed he is, the more consciously he works.
Oh, let's just take that much. Okay, the form of the personality. And, you know, I found this so interesting. Your present vehicle is built up on the vibration that you ended your last life with. And he also tells you that by the age of 21, what do you have? By the age of 21, you have now, again, the same etheric body you had when you were in your last life. That's the condition. It takes 21 years to get it back to the condition it was. So it's so interesting, the personality ray changes often. He says, and he says to some of these people, by the time you are at the end of the present incarnation, you should have the first ray personality, which will be your personality ray in your next life. Meaning, we are setting up already a condition from the point of view of the rays, which is going to have continuity into the next life. It's almost like, it's the same, and then DK says, it's continuity. you die in Aries, you are born in Aries. More continuity. So you work up things in Devachan, and between lives you polish the stone, as it says. You refine your technique, you learn more, but you come right back and you re-grasp the threads where you left them. I often wonder, when a bunch of people are in the same family, are born with a similar birthday in the same month, whether they didn't all go out together. Sometimes occurs to me, you know. Now, obviously, we can't prove this, but when reincarnational research is reliable, it's going to be very interesting to actually trace the birthdays of people and see if this is really true, that the continuity exists. Sometimes I've thought to myself, hey, what about the progressed son? Okay, so I'm born in Aries, my son goes through Taurus, through Gemini, maybe I die when my progressed son is in Cancer. Well, couldn't I just as easily pick up the threads in my next life and be born in Cancer, because the son moved to Cancer? But he seems to be very specific about it. You pick up the threads in the life you left it. And that's one of those controversial statements. And people say, oh, can't be, you know, and that's nonsense, and it's too simple. But there's no one that can prove that it is true or not proven. Because the only psychic impressions that we have are not verifiable by a consensus of psychics, especially on these matters, of a date, a specific date, and getting, let's say, 5 or 6 psychics to confirm that date of birth independently. Such a thing does not exist yet. So if it did, the reincarnational research can go forward, and then we will really learn about our progress in lives. Right now, it's speculation. I think about, hey, we know Cagliostro was Blavatsky. The trouble is, Cagliostro died in the dungeon, and it may never have been properly recorded. And, you know, well, and, okay, so he's Blavatsky, great. But is Blavatsky Blavatsky? In other words, was the person that was born in 1831 or whatever it was, 1833, 1831, did someone else take over? Was it a tulku? Was it a disciple who gave that body, and then some other entity came in and started to do the work? Which is also one of the theories. So, you know, you can't be sure that when a person dies at a high level of initiation like Cagliostro, third degree, that he might be born again, or he might take over a body. We are told that you have to have a very interesting technical piece of information. You have to have the sixth petal open to be able to offer your body to a teacher to work through your body. I think that's very interesting, because it's kind of like the second initiation thing. Sixth petal fully open, you're tied in with the monadic plane at that point, you are somewhat unselfish, and it's only then that you can offer your body to the teacher. How high must the teacher be? Must he be a master? How high was what's the man's name who was the successor of Master Jesus, Apollonius? How high was Apollonius when he offered his body to Master Jesus? Now, I know this is an interesting idea, because Apollonius was born before Master Jesus died. This is a problem. See what I mean?
Could the soul of Jesus take two at the same time?
Well, I remain a skeptic for the time being, because this business of putting in more than one appearance, he does talk about it. But he talks about it in terms of monads. And he says a third ray monad can put in 3 independent simultaneous appearances. And usually they're not on the same planes. A second ray monad can put in 2 simultaneous appearances. So it all depends on whether we can apply this to that being, or whether we take the more likely relationship of a disciple setting up a vehicle as a tulku for his teacher. Because when you're a teacher, do you want to spend the time growing up, as it were? You're already grown up, you're already a fourth degree initiate, you don't need that. So basically you put your student to work and say, make me a vehicle, and the student is high enough to offer you, be able to come and go, come and go. Alright, I want to come in, okay, now I come back. That went on with Christ and Jesus all the time. So this is my theory anyway, that between Apollonius and Jesus, it also went on. The same thing on the sixth ray. Especially when one traces the birth time of Apollonius, according to most authorities. Rather old, and not born after Jesus. Not born after Jesus died. Anyway,
Apollonius didn't wake up spiritually until 16 years old.
Uh-huh.
So maybe Jesus had some lazy embodiments going on at the same time.
Well, of course, Jesus was out of the... We don't know how long he was out of the body. See, it could have been that Lord Maitreya and Jesus worked together in India. This is speculation. When Jesus went to India, as we are told in a number of the, including the Agni Yoga books, that he took this pilgrimage, he disappeared for quite a number of years. Well, Lord Maitreya, India, and so forth, it could have been they worked out the system of how to do it. And it could be also that Apollonius and Jesus, had this kind of relationship. For the moment, all I can do is speculate. Could be this, could be that. But I do know that the tulku phenomenon is a real thing. And DK tells you about what stage of advancement you have to be to offer your body to an initiate to take the body over. And it's not a low stage. You have to... And this is why I think it works. Because when you reach the second degree, ruled by Neptune, having to do with the astral plane, you can go in and out of the body much more easily than before. So that gives you that freedom to vacate. Neptune allows you to slip out and have someone else slip in. And before that time, it's not easy. All right, anyway, just thoughts. The form, yes.
What you just wrote there, you said you should have the first ray personality, which will be your personality ray in the next life.
Yes. Yes, that's great.
You mean that...
In other words, at the end of your life, you have...
one personality only.
Yes. Yes. Here you are... You now have a sixth-ray personality. Now you're 60 years old. Now you have a ray one personality. This is the same personality ray as you will have in your next life. There was a specific man, LTSK. He says, you have a sixth-ray personality now. By the end of this life, you will have the same ray one personality as you will have in your next life. After your next life, you will have a Ray 2 personality, or you are supposed to. We could always mess it up, The soul has a plan.
So meaning that many disciples actually at the end of their lifetime change their personality?
That's right. That's right. That's what I'm assuming that is the implication. Now we know that some disciples stay on the same Ray. You can have a Ray for many lives running. But if you're going to change your Ray, you may already give the evidence of that Ray to the point, to the extent that someone analyzing your rays would say, yes, you have a first-ray personality now. And it's going to be a carryover. Well, I don't know, have any of you felt, we've reached mature years, many of us, have you felt that your personality ray is morphing, changing in any way?
I can remember that the speaker told once, it was not about intentionality, but about the mental ray.
Uh-huh.
He had a fourth ray in the body.
Who said?
Douglas Baker.
Baker.
Yeah, Baker.
Baker said, yes.
It was very astronomy. He was a medical
yes.
person. Then he in the age of 35 or so began to study medicine.
Yes.
And he has changed his mind to a fifth ray mind.
Yes. I remember Baker's rays. I remember he thought he had a second ray soul and a first ray personality and a fifth ray mental body and a sixth ray astral and a third ray.
Yes, yes. But he has changed this fifth ray mind from a fourth ray.
Well, you know, look, DK uses the word expert diagnosis. He says the rays will be capable of expert diagnosis. And that's coming, but it's not here now. So what you have now is people sharing their impressions of what is happening. Or DK is telling you, and he should know, that this change is happening. He tells a few people about the change. He tells them, you know, your soul is going from this to that. Your astral body is going from this to that. Your personality is going from this to that. Other than that, we don't have any real confirmation, except for the feeling that it might be happening. You know, I feel that it's happening in my own case. I've been on the fourth ray for so long, you know what I mean? And I just feel certain things happening that bring in other rays on the personality level without losing the fourth ray kind of momentum.
Perhaps you're just adding bits to the fourth ray that you didn't realize you had. I mean, you know, well,
Well, we don't know, but what we do is we have a feeling of the generalized quality which is showing, right? And that generalized quality we begin to assess and we try to compare it with the behavior of others and so forth, like that. Anyway, look, astrology is like concrete science compared to the rays. You know what I mean? The rays are so fluid, and you can't just... You can't just look at something in the sky and say, aha, there's my ray. You can't do it. It's much more subtle. It requires the intuition. And remember that the rays don't emerge until later. The personality ray is delayed in its emergence. It may be there, but you don't see it. The soul ray is delayed. Whereas with astrology, what you see is what you get. Astrology... If you're primitive, you're a primitive Aries. If you're in the middle, you're a middle Aries. If you're advanced, you're advanced Aries. You're Aries all the way, from the time you are born as a caveman or whatever, until you're a master. The astrology is stamped on you. But the rays are much slower in their emergence. You know, in the beginning, as a Lemurian, the only thing that might be recognizable is the ray of your physical body. As an Atlantean, you may not have even added a mental ray that can be detected by anyone but a master. I don't want to get off on the rays, you know. I'm going to talk about that tonight. I think so. Actually, you never know what you're going to talk about. You know what I mean? Okay. Anything could happen.
That could be dangerous.
I'm going to talk about you. Now, take Mimi for example.
Yes.
And we won't spend more than 20 minutes, okay? Okay. But Julie's a Leo, so I've got to include her too, otherwise she's just going to feel terribly left out. Okay. So anyway, the key vibration is set up, and that form proves adequate for the average man and serves him until death. It's so interesting. It's almost as if the average man just goes with what he's got. There's just kind of a momentum and a very slow evolution from one ray to another. But the man who is entering on the occult path starts with the vehicle provided, yes, but changes it. And Vulcan is here again. Build ever new and better. And the more progressed he is, more consciously he works. So how many times have you seen people, let's say, rebuild themselves? He says it takes 14 years to do that. If you're going to change your body, it takes 14 years. Well nigh 14 years, I think he said. Let's see, nigh 14. When a man starts to follow the path of occult meditation, it takes well nigh 14 years to rebuild the subtle bodies and incidentally the physical. Incidentally, because it's not a principle. It's going to reflect what happens in the subtle bodies. So the best way to rebuild your physical body seems to be to rebuild your subtle bodies first, and then it will all work out. Which, of course, is not to say that physical disciplines are not useful and all the rest. He spends time on that, too. Okay. Hence eventuates... So the new man is building ever better vehicles. You know, even in a simple example of deciding to go on an exercise program, even something like that, even something where you decide, well, now I will eat according to my blood type, or not, or now I will become a vegetarian, or not. All of those things have to do with the conscious rebuilding of the vehicle. So disciples can be expected to do that kind of thing, instead of just going with what I got. In other words, if I just go with what I got, then tamas is ruling. But does tamas rule disciples? It shouldn't, should it? Tamas should not rule disciples. What guna generally rules disciples? What? Raja. Rajas. Rajas. Activity. That's what generally rules disciples. And when we finally become an initiate, it's sattva and the rhythm of the soul that rules us. I was very interested, though, to see D.K. equate tamas with spirit. Can you see why? I mean, because it doesn't change. Right? You usually think about tamas, slow, heavy, inert vibration, the worst of Vulcan, you can't move the matter, nothing responds, sleepy all the time, tired all the time, whatever. But that's lower tamas. Higher tamas is the spirit itself, because it just is unchanging. Interesting, I think. Okay, so anyway, the man starts to build. Hence eventuates that constant turmoil and frequent ill health of the beginner in occult life. He's always working at changing things. He senses the law, he realizes the need of raising his keynote, and frequently begins with mistakes. He starts to build anew his physical body by diet and discipline instead of working from the inner outward. Although, you know, D.K. does tell us in Letters on Occult Meditation, pure food, pure water, exercise, he talks about all that. But this is like a real strong outer program while ignoring the inner. You really can't do that successfully, because it'll always just catch up with you. You know, if your desire body is not taken care of and you go on that big diet and you look fantastic, that desire body is still there. And it will lead you back to the trough. Yeah. The word in English, the word trough, it's where the pigs eat. Unhappy thought. In the careful discipline of mind and the manipulation of thought matter and in transmutation of emotion comes the working out on the physical plane. Add to the two above, physical plane purity as to food and manner of life, and in 7 years' time, the man has, well, there's fast ones and slow ones.
In half seven, of 14.
It was, well, seven is half of 14. And in 7 years' time, the man has built for himself three new bodies around the permanent atoms. So I'll say here, Mimi, what happened to 14? I mean, I just want to know who said it, you know what I mean? For the future. Well, anyway, 7 and 14, the whole idea is rebuilding does not occur overnight. I'll tell you what I'm going to do, because I can see we're going to have this situation. I'm going to give us a little break now, and then we'll come back, and then we will call it quits at 5 o'clock. So you can take your 14 minutes now and then come back and we'll do our best to finish this up. Or maybe you just want to sit here and suffer. Okay. All right. Quick, the cookies are waiting. All right.
The trough waiting.
The trough.